Welcome to episode 55 of Gallifrey Public Radio. A perfect technological storm causes us to lose an entire episode of GPR, but we regain some lost episodes of Doctor Who, so we call that a fair trade. We also do our commentary on the Rings of Akaten with special guest Shooter. But first, your host. I'm Jay Whitten.
Are we talking adult like Torchwood or adult like Cinemax after 11 p.m.?
And with me are Melissa Mazza.
I demand to be referred to as Sagacity from now on.
And Keir Hansen.
The jockstrap of Rassilon is formidable and large.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But if we get into anything too serious, don't worry. We'll warn you again.
Welcome to episode 55 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we speak in dog alien, and we realize our Pokemon card collection is worth far more on a fictional planet where they sing to the Great Pumpkin than it ever will be here. Talking today about Rings of Akaten, I am Melissa. Welcome again to Gallifrey Public Radio. Tonight again with Jay. How are you, Jay?
Doing well.
Good. And we have Keir. Hi, Keir.
Hello, hello.
We are ready to talk about Rings of Akaten, and hello to our special guest.
Sure.
Greetings and salutations. How are you guys doing?
Fantastic, sir. Fantastic. Thank you again for joining us.
Thanks for having me. This is great.
Yeah, so last week got a little fracked up, so we apologize for that. And this week is going to be way better because Rings of Akaten, totally better than... I can't even say that with a straight face.
All right. Let's everybody just go to your neutral corners until we actually start the commentary.
Okay, yeah. No, Melissa, taking the gloves off.
Exactly. So, yeah, you tell them.
So we actually have some really big news this week. So, you know, we've been waiting for news, which is waiting for the 50th and whatever. And there's some really crazy news this week. But today I want to start with Big Finish has announced that there are three new episodes of their series, Dark Eyes, which is an Eighth Doctor series. So you guys want to talk about this one first?
The great thing about it is these are audio dramas that actually will involve the original talent. So, you know, Big Finish has always put out some phenomenal audio work, despite the fact that apparently, from what I understand from a lot of the panels and discussions with some of the classic doctors, their studios are not the most sanitary locations in the world. Apparently it's something about, you know, you have to feel like you have to go wash your face and skin very carefully after speaking into the microphones because everything looks and smells rather disgusting.
I don't know.
This is just, you know, when they had the panel with McCoy and Davison, they went on a tangent for about 10 minutes talking about how they loved working for Big Finish, but felt like they had to take long crying game-like showers after working there. So I don't know what that says, but I've listened to a number.
Sorry, I just got a visual of Sylvester McCoy curled up in the shower crying.
I know what it is. But I've listened to a number of their productions that they've done for Sixth Doctor stuff, because obviously Colin Baker loves to record those. He loves to hear himself speak. I have not personally heard any of the Dark Eyes collection they put together, and I was kind of looking forward to it. I guess they're just now doing the pre-orders for the second, third, and fourth installments. So looking forward to seeing that. But it's a matter, in my personal case, it's just a matter of, God, there's so much content I need to plow through right now. That, you know. But we've got McGann back as a doctor and Ruth Bradley as his companion, O'Sullivan. So I'm kind of psyched about this. It's just going to have to go at the bottom of the queue.
The thing that I'm psyched about, because you all know me, I constantly say, oh, I'm totally going to read that, totally going to listen to that, and I never do. So I will never listen to this. But the promo photo shows Paul McGann looking very youthful, which gives me hope that maybe he'll be in the 50th as the doctor somehow.
He always does. The man looks more awesome now than he did in the 90s when they shot the movie. I think he looks more the doctor now with a few extra miles on him than he did at the time. Not to take anything away, you know, with how he pulled off, you know, the Victorian jacket and everything like that, but it just, I don't know. I think he still holds the look. So
yeah, I would definitely enjoy a live performance from the doctor versus a reincarnation CGI like they did with at the end of the season 7.
Yeah. Yeah, to sort of to do the overlays in the old over the old scene work. If any of our listeners do have a little bit more background or familiarity with the Dark Eyes seasons in general, we'd love to get some take on them from what's been released already, or what your expectations are for what's going to be releasing in this set. Because again, you know, you're one up on us in that case. This is something that we've got to put on our to-do list. But the news about it is definitely positive, because, you know, I'll admit, I go back and I watch the movie every once in a while. I know a lot of people poo-poo it, but I take away some valuable stuff from it for a U.S. attempt at trying to kickstart the series again. So, and I think McGann did an exceptional job with what he was handed. It was just a matter of what he was handed.
Mm-hmm. I have high hopes that we'll find a more rigorous tie-in between the Eighth Doctor and the rest of the series as we know it now through the 50th and beyond.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm
more interested in knowing how Eighth proceeds forward than what really got him there in the first place. That's sort of the rush job that they did getting him from McCoy to McGann. Yeah. So
I think, I mean, if they do touch it at all, that will be the way it is.
Open the time lock. Anyway, next piece of news.
So
speaking of the time lock, and speaking of going back to Trenzalore, what's gonna kill Smith?
This story came out, this rumor, this is completely unconfirmed, but apparently there was an actor who tweeted something recently about being cast for the Christmas special of Doctor Who playing a Cyberman. So now the whole idea now is that it's going to be the Cybermen that end the Doctor's 11th regeneration. So,
which is a bit of a monkey wrench in some of our early theories. Because what would the Cyber, if we're convinced that the original prophecy that we were playing around with and the fall of the 11th on the field to Trenzalore and those things was really going to take us back there, what the hell are the Cybermen doing there? They weren't a part of that conflict whatsoever. So
I think it's perfectly compatible with your theories, honestly, because in the past few years, in the past few seasons, the Cybermen just kind of show up at other people's, like, I don't know the exact episodes, but
they're kind of opportunistic.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you want to get into their motivation or whatever, but I'm just saying from a storytelling point of view, it seems like it's, you know, so and so who brings him to wherever the whole thing with Amy Pond and having her baby and all that was, like, you know,
and, for Devil's Run and that whole thing.
Yeah, that kind of thing, and the Cybermen just happen to be there. Or I'm thinking of when they put him in the
Pandora.
Yeah, that.
We're here to provide words.
But anyway, the Cybermen have always been a part of Eleven and his whole thing, but not a major part. So I think we're hearing a lot of rumors this week, and that rumor actually makes sense because I could totally see the Cybermen just kind of being there when something else happens to him.
Right.
Like when
an opportunity to get some very interesting upgrades, and the Cybermen are definitely more more capable now with some of Gaiman's most recent upgrades, pun intended, that he's done to them, and the whole, you know, moving at lightning speed kind of thing.
But only once per episode. Once they get into large groups, they can no longer do that.
That's it. You burned it out. You blew the wad once. Now you got it.
We've entered into such a special golden age of Doctor Who because it's being written, produced by people that grew up as fans, right? So yeah. I'm sure they'll treat it with respect and use the Cybermen how they're supposed to be used and upgrade them only once per episode. Because you got to maintain some kind of continuity. You can't have them jump forward faster than you can write a story, you know.
So. True, and it also goes along with the idea. You know, you mentioned, unless you mentioned the whole Pandorica collection. You know, that Sermon on the Mount that happened at Stonehenge and whatnot was a matter of, yeah, there would have been actors there in their Cybermen gear, really excited about the fact they're being part of it, but they could have been part of another collection of all of the Doctor's foes, you know, trying to find an opportunity to take out the Great Storm, you know, or what have you. I don't know. I personally, I'm hoping for something far more sinister, not just a brute force, to be what finally takes out the 11th.
Yeah.
I want some espionage or some sabotage or some subterfuge or other words that come from French origin.
You know, they had an opportunity to do that throughout the second half of season 7, and I'm just going to call it out right now. They dropped the ball on it throughout the second half of the series. There was no intertwining of that evil, sinister sort of...
They gave themselves the perfect opportunity. They could have used the great intelligence, and I think they totally failed on that.
They should have. That was the whole major story arc, and they didn't do anything with it. And in retrospect, I'm a little peeved at them as trying to treat Clara as a... item that could go either way, you know, who's the impossible girl, and we eventually found out and everything, and it was just total misleading, at least to me, and I hope they can rebound from that and actually intertwine that sort of story arc back in, because they in my opinion, dropped the ball in the second half of season seven on that.
Right. No, total agreement there. I mean, you and I talked early on in the season too about, you know, what some of our hopes were when they decided to coming out of the Snowman episode, and then hearing that they mentioned the intelligence again, we thought, oh great, now we finally got a formidable big bad that is powerful enough and sentient enough and long-lasting enough. I mean, the whole idea, if you really take the whole storyline back, this thing predated the current universe, you know, in terms of its corporeal form. So, you know, this could have been something that really would have been a nice, a brilliant adversary, and I guess they didn't decide to utilize it enough because it was too cerebral or whatever the reasons that they decided that they wanted to tell ghost stories instead or what have you.
Which is really baffling, because Stimo's steeped into Sherlock, right? I mean, you've got that sort of anti-hero slash villain running around in that universe, and for him to drop the ball in Doctor Who and have that string not be there to pull, it was disappointing in retrospect. Of course, when we were going through it, we had no idea what was going on, so sure. Maybe that was part of the fun.
And totally stay tuned for our Halloween episode where we discuss the ghost stories and love.
Well, so in other news, it looks like BBC America dropped the ball again. They recently put out that they were going to, that the Day of the Doctor was going to broadcast at 2:45 p.m. Eastern Time, meaning that it would be 7:45 p.m. in the UK. Now, this was quickly torn down, and they tried to scrub every possible inch of it that they could, but it was up for longer than like 3 seconds, so clearly it got out. So this happens way more than they probably want it to, but you know, every time that it does, it's usually like, you know, BBC America reveals, hey, we're going to do it on this day. Oh wait, take it down real quick. Wait a couple days. Okay, we're doing it on this day, you know, and they pull it down, and then we get the official announcement later on. So I wouldn't be surprised if this really is how it comes.
Yeah, we're going to do a global simulcast. Well, not the entire globe.
Well, like 75 countries.
Typically, we're just expecting to say, sorry, Canada. Can't even do that now.
I sure hope they don't penalize us for the network for doing that. Yeah. No, you don't get it at 2:45. You get it at 4:45.
No! Yeah, no, it's they're going to hold it off for America until like Sunday.
Oh, I can see them doing it.
It's just kind of like, you know, Captain Jack getting cut from the 50th. Like, it's like, oh, you want to open your mouth and say something? No, you're done.
I don't understand why this is such a difficult programming decision. I honestly don't. I mean, why would they be so wishy-washy about this?
Well, the only thing that I can think of is that they're actually trying to tie it in with like a live studio lead-in, interviews, some sort of like talk show sort of thing, or a party like they do for premieres sometimes.
But I feel like they could do that no matter what. Like, the party would wait on their schedule. Something else is going on.
Yeah. Probably maximize every time zone's viewership ability, because we are talking about ratings here.
Oh yeah, you know, some bean counter at the BBC is sitting there thinking, okay, this is our largest concentration of people that watch the show, so let's cater to them and see how it fits in with everybody else. And they've got a whole spreadsheet going, and they have figured out exactly what the formula is to figure it all out. So I think that they've got it. I think that we now are privy to the actual time, but they're going to hold on to it and announce it for some reason, because they like to wait until the last minute.
Yeah.
Here's my thought. Go ahead and run it on the simulcast slot, however that falls. You know, if that does mean 2:45 Eastern here in the States, and then do the Christmas Story December 24th routine, like on TBS, and run it for 24 hours straight.
Yeah.
You're worried about ratings? Keep running the damn thing over and over. What better programming do you possibly have that you could put on the air for the next 10 days that anyone would care to watch?
Top Gear.
Oh God.
No, Star Trek. I really need to watch Next Gen.
Yeah.
What else is there even on there?
Because I definitely want those commercial breaks like they don't have on my Netflix queue. You know,
Sherlock. They could do Sherlock, too. I mean,
but they don't.
That's blasphemous.
Good, eventually.
Yeah, when 2015 rolls around.
The 75th anniversary of Doctor Who, led into by Sherlock Season 3.
Yeah.
Well, we're not bitter.
So, yeah, it's right around the corner, though. I mean, it's starting to come fast and hard now. But the really big news this week, though, is that you remember all those rumors we heard a couple weeks ago about how they found a lot of lost Doctor Who episodes and the BBC said, no, we didn't find anything. Well, guess what? Apparently the Beebs has taken a page from Moffat's playbook.
Yeah.
Even their official archivist, who had come out a couple months ago and saying there's definitively, absolutely no way whatsoever, because it's my job to keep an eye on these things, and I've seen absolutely nothing that has implied that any salvageable episodes are available from any of the serials predating all the way back to... Oh, those over there. Well, I don't know. 3 tons of material takes a little while to archive, I suppose.
Yeah, so the announcement was supposed to come out yesterday as we record this. Now they pushed it back once, so it's supposed to be on Thursday. So it will have already, if they stick to that, it will have already come out by the time you hear this. But who knows? It might still be a week off by the time we get this out. So
right. Well, at first it was going to be a matter of they were going to release all of the information about it. Now they're just going to, correct me if I'm wrong, they're just going to announce which titles have been salvaged or are salvageable.
Yeah. At this point, there's no way to tell what they're going to come out with because they keep pushing it back and they keep changing their statements. And all we know is that there have been lost episodes found. That's all we have at this point, and who knows when we're going to get anything more.
Yes, and at this point, anybody who says that, oh, it's narrowing down, that the thoughts are that it is most likely some of Troughton's episode, bullpucky. There are no indications of which of the episodes of the supposedly lost or destroyed episodes are there. None.
You know, the thing that keeps on popping up in my head, and I know that this is just purely pipe dream wishful thinking, but they keep pushing it back and they keep, like, you know, mothballing everything. And I'm just like, are they just trying to prepare for, like, the biggest announcement in Doctor Who ever, saying that they have 106 lost episodes?
It might actually be trying to watch them to see if they're recoverable.
True, yeah, and looking to see how much of it can actually be salvaged or whether it's one that's going to have to go through a lot of digital restoration.
But I mean, can you imagine what kind of shockwaves that would send throughout the community if they said that they had found every lost episode?
And then we can finally buy DVD box sets of each season?
Yeah.
Do you know how long it's going to take to digitally remaster and restore all these?
You know what? If I can buy them in 20 years, if I can know that they will be available for me to buy in 20 years...
I'll pre-order them now on Amazon.
Yeah, and that's another thing. It's going to take a lot of money, too. So they're definitely going to have to... Whatever production they decide to put out with these episodes, and we don't know how many. Could be 2, could be 100, who knows? They're definitely going to have to make it worth it financially. Otherwise, they won't do it.
Yeah, but I would imagine that to a great degree, unless the degradation is severe. I mean, they've already committed to a certain amount of monetary investment in hiring the animation team to do the animated overlays over the audio for the couple of episodes that they've now released on the most recent box sets. Help me here. Which episodes did we just get restored? Which two? Second Doctor.
I don't know their names.
Oh, God, it's going to kill me. I want to say Planet of Death, but I don't think that might have been one of them.
Yeah, if you think of the titles that you're trying to come up with, then let me know and I'll edit it in later.
I'm not really going to edit it. Radio edit. But there were two that they've already commissioned to have redone in the rather tastefully done black and white animation style, sort of a flash animation. So it's just
I mean, those actually look really sweet. I've seen little clips and stuff, and it looks really cool. I would not mind watching an entire episode like that, you know, because they do a really good job of it.
And in a bit of an anticlimactic bit of news, but just interesting in general, because it makes us kind of scratch our heads and say, is the fact that, you know, a couple weeks ago, or maybe even just a week and a half or so ago, there were some little quick interview snippets taken that were saying Matt Smith might have regretted the decision that he made about leaving Doctor Who at the time that he did, but that's not slowing him down to do some of his film work. And now apparently it's not just film work. He's going to tread the boards as a psychopath. So, hey, why not? The Brits being, as Melissa and I were discussing really quickly before we started recording, they seem to be real fond of stage adaptations of, and specifically musical adaptations of some unusual material. They've decided to take American Psycho and put it on stage in the West End January of next year. So you'll see Matt Smith as Patrick Bateman, who, if you're thinking of anything like I think, all of a sudden you picture Christian Bale doing naked crunches covered in blood in his apartment in 1980. He's just totally twisted.
And if you're anything like me, you're picturing Matt Smith doing that now.
Yeah, try to wash that out of your mind.
I don't know. As soon as I think of American Psycho, I start picturing Matt Smith talking about Huey Lewis in the news, and I'm like, okay, I might be on board with this. I can see Matt Smith doing that whole speech and, like, you know, dancing around and everything. I'm like, okay, I might pay to see that.
With or without the wig.
Ooh.
By that point? But it's also going to be the music for it, which I don't understand. How do you turn this bloodbath of a film into a musical that's not a satirical musical, like Silence the Musical or something like that, like we had here at the New York Fringe Festivals and things.
Yeah, is I mean, I don't even know if it is it a satirical or is it not? You said it wasn't?
No, it's not. This is being done as a serious adaptation of the story, and the music is being composed by Duncan Sheik.
So,
of all people, I mean, who is probably the only positive thing to come out of that horrible Spider-Man musical.
I was just going to say, Duncan Sheik has done musicals, but...
Yeah, he's done a number of them. But, I mean, he's, as a composer, as a songwriter in his own right, perfectly talented. Everything else that he's been involved in terms of, like, that turn off the dark thing was just a debacle. But the music apparently was solid, so fine. I don't even know. Can Matt Smith even carry a tune? They did their little Christmas videos, right, where they would sing along. But it was always Rory playing the piano in them, and you'd have Matt Smith and Anderson singing or behind him, horribly out of tune.
I mean, I think it behooves you as an actor to learn how to sing. I think Matt Smith will completely surprise us, and I'm just with you as I don't know if this is actually going to be a good musical. I'm sure he will be wonderful in it, but...
Yeah, because he already has no eyebrows, which makes him look kind of sinister to begin with.
That's what I've been saying.
Jeez,
step from there to a psychopath.
If he can just grow a goatee, then he'll be like completely evil.
He looked odd with a beard to begin with. I mean, as we were noticing last week with the whole Bells of St. John thing, that's seeing him with that beard on, a little disturbing.
He also had the hood, you know, the long tunnel
the
hood.
The whole druid thing going.
Yeah.
Well, if he had done the real monk...
He would have had to have a bald cap.
Yeah.
Nice.
I used to know the word for that. Damn it, I can't.
He's just behind the curve now, you know. He was like, I should have shaved my head. Well, better late than never.
Yeah, Karen did it first.
Yeah, beat him to it. We'll have some more news next week, by the way, about some of the developments from that project as well for The Last Guardians. I've been following some news articles that will be good stuff to add. But we've got an episode to watch.
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do.
I know Shooter's getting all excited because this is his favorite episode, so this should be entertaining. Because I know that the rest of us were, I don't want to say...
Nonplussed.
We're a little underwhelmed, we'll say.
Yeah, and I could see that. We actually don't disagree on many major points. It's just...
You're going to go back to your whimsy defense.
Well, I mean, it's the whole Odyssey, actually, not necessarily Whimsy, but, you know, like with the sun or the planet, actually, I think it's a planet, turned into kind of a 2010 sort of implosion sort of visual out there. It definitely gave it an Odyssey sort of feel. If I had to go on a journey with the Doctor, this is what I would expect. But I know it's not Doctor Who. I agree with you guys all over on that. The story just wasn't up to par. And I think maybe some of that has to do with the Clara mystery at the time. I don't know. They had to find some way to bring her in and give her some sort of equal footing with the Doctor beyond what we saw on the Dalek planet and previously in Victorian times with the snowmen. I think he needed to connect with her, and the pain that both of them feel at the end with them connecting. It, from that, I, as we'll see when we watch the episode, it is something that you can watch and enjoy, at least from my point of view.
Well, knowing all the some of the ways that you had I'm not gonna say defended the episode, but explained your particular connection to the episode, along with some things that that another one of our devoted listeners and contributors, Soleil, had to say about it as well. I saw the positives and the negatives in equal parts. So I vowed going into this tonight that I was going to look at it with fresh eyes and just take it in again, because I honestly, I will admit that after the first two watches at the top of the season, right around original air date, I have not watched this particular episode again since. Mm-hmm. So I saw it about twice, you know, obviously the day it aired, and then, you know, once more about a week later to kind of discuss it a bit at the time. But then I walked away from it. Figured I had enough about it, and the, you know, the internets were ablaze with people screaming at one another that it was either the best or worst thing they'd ever seen, and I had to walk away because it was just so divisive. I said, God, just get me to next week's episode so we can stop talking about this.
Yeah, I mean, there definitely was that part of it where everybody was either, I mean, you were one side of the fence or you were the other. And for those few of us that were like, well, it was okay, but it wasn't the greatest thing in the world, it was a very uncomfortable week. Because, I mean, the people that were very opinionated, they're like, no, you cannot sit there on the fence. Pick a side so I can either, you know, team up with you or assassinate you.
I never did that to you, Jay. Ever. Might have done it with Kier, but I never did it with you.
Yeah. I saved those text messages. They were long.
Yes, they were. I had a lot of time on my hands back then.
Yeah. All right, we ready to do this?
Yeah, let's go ahead and watch this.
Okay, let's watch a bunch of leaves blowing around for a little while.
All right, sure. Synchronize your watches, guys.
All right. So let's get going.
On three or after three?
We go one, two, three, go.
And then go. One, two, three, then go.
Okay.
All right. In 3, 2, 1, go.
Oh, yeah. Lots of leaves.
Leafies.
Looks oddly familiar right now at this time of year.
I wouldn't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, really.
88 degrees. Yeah, no.
So he's got a map there, right? Where's he going? Does it make a difference?
No.
Yeah, he's clearly lost. And bah. I've actually had that happen to me before. Not to where I stumbled out into the street, but, you know, just getting a leaf smacked into your face. It's uncomfortable.
Love at first sight.
I love the 80s hair bow.
So 80s.
It completely sells the time.
You know what I thought with this yellow umbrella was a reference to another show?
How I Met Your Mother?
Yes.
I think that anytime I see a yellow umbrella now, thankfully. Yes.
I think this predated it. Oh, no, it didn't. They showed
no,
that first, right?
Yeah. Yellow umbrella has been around for years on How I Met Your Mother.
It's the most important leaf in the world because, you know, it's a leaf and it's important.
Oh, it's the cheesy romantic stuff that you say at the beginning of every relationship.
Yeah. And she's totally buying it, too. Look, I mean, she's like,
even though I've had to replace this leaf like 4 times because it's dried up and it keeps crumbling in my pocket.
Yeah, that always bugged me. I'm like, how do you keep a dry leaf in your pocket and not have it turn into little chunks?
So this is kind of important. The doctor is phasing in and out of their lives right here, right? He does not know what Clara is at this point in time.
Right, he's so looking for indications that there's some hinky-binky stuff going on.
I always thought that was cute, that he thought he was being attacked,
yeah.
But he got kicked by a ball.
Yeah.
Because he's so on edge with this whole...
Yeah, the Mr. Furley kung fu move that he comes up with.
It's great, isn't it? This all just creeped me out so much, though. I'm like, the doctor is just a complete stalker at this point.
It is creepy.
Right. And she has to remember seeing him because he's been around so much. Matter of fact,
they can't do that though because Amy. You know what I mean? This would be another Amy Pond if he was the kid that, you know, someone from her childhood. Mm. Sorry, Shooter.
No.
Does anyone else do you guys remember the whole controversy around the date that she died?
Yeah. They were taking.
I remember
that.
Talking about that.
March 5th, 2005. I never noticed the steam holes in the floorboards there. Ambiance.
He literally doesn't know.
Yep. And this is something that I genuinely liked about this early setup was the fact that this man who has this, you know, these centuries of breadth and knowledge and experience is running up against something he doesn't understand, and it's driving him batty. I liked.
It's not.
I remember we talked about that at the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not so much that he can't figure it out. Because I mean, how many times does the doctor run into a situation that he just doesn't get or doesn't, you know, has to go looking for the clues? It's just.
But he usually licks it.
That's the problem. He's never licked Claire. Wow, that sounded wrong.
Wow.
I didn't
go there.
Oh, wow.
No, but it's something that should be readily available to him that's not, is the thing that I think bothers him so much.
Hmm. Yeah, well, how many times do you meet three different versions of a person?
Yeah.
I wish they had shown multiple versions.
This is an important comment, what she is saying right now. What is time made of?
What is it made of?
And they could have done so much with that comment right there to bring it to the last episode, and they didn't. They just dropped it right there. And this also bugged me, where she can't remember where... what to do, where to go, what's important to her. I thought that was such a key indicator of what Clara actually was. And in the end, it was just the same sort of bonehead move I would do. Just totally.
That's what I've been saying. Blank. It's a human thing. Yeah.
Yeah. But in the
but
context.
They're good at throwing you off the trail. Yeah. You think it means something.
Well, also bear in mind the fact that this was Neil Cross's writing with some of Moffat's oversights, whereas when we finally do get our explanation, that's Moffat's pen start to finish. So, you know, we had mentioned at a couple points in the last few episodes where we were kind of hoping that Stephen had taken more of an integral part in some of the edits and revisions, or had stepped in to, well, not necessarily co-write, but do some more steering corrections to keep it true to his vision for the season's arc, mm-hmm. that his standoffishness or his lack of really stepping in on a lot of these things failed to give the season the arc that we all wanted to chew on. A lot of these episodes felt very disjointed or out of sequence at times. We've talked about that a lot, too. Mm-hmm.
So this is one of the scenes that I just bought into this episode, where they're looking at this planet, sun, whatever you want to call it, and they're seeing the asteroid belt around it, and it's just very glorious space, colorful scene, and you know, I just go all gooey for that.
It reminds me a lot of Neverending Story.
Sure.
That's what I get in the visuals right here.
He called it a star, for what it's worth.
Yeah, okay. See, all of these planets orbiting the same star.
But I never seen another planet. It's all asteroids.
I don't see planets at all.
Good point.
Yeah, it's, well, they wrote the lines before they did the effects.
Yeah.
Here's where I thought we could have had, you know, they've done the whole, you know, alien marketplace trope often.
Star Wars Cantina.
And even within Who. Even within Who, we've done this a couple of times, but this is where immediately one of the first things that I just tripped over, I noticed, and that was the Universal Translator failing to do its job.
I don't think it was failing to do its job. I think it was just making it more fun.
It's for dramatic heightening purposes.
I think the Doctor loves this sort of stuff, talking in various languages. I mean... He doesn't get the chance to do that often, and this is a perfect place to go through that.
Yeah, I mean, this is a great point for Matt Smith to just, you know, go nuts and be on a playground, but... Yeah, I mean, this is just...
But it's also, like, how do you show that? Like, when they went to Pompeii, and Donna does this whole thing, and when she speaks English, they think she's speaking Welsh or something. How would you show multiple languages? You know, like, I think this is a good, you know... Let Matt Smith do his thing. That's how you show multiple languages.
This was a very deliberate choosing by the Doctor. I mean, he wanted to go here for a variety of different reasons. It was an awesome area for Clara. He enjoyed it previously when he was there. And he wants to get something out of Clara. And we're going to see that a little bit as it evolves throughout the episode. But where this falls flat, this construct falls flat with me, is that we're never going to see any of these aliens again.
Yeah.
I thought this might be the start of something like, you know, J.J. Abrams and Person of Interest, any character in the entire series is fair game to come back later.
Sure.
And you have some depth of knowledge. I just don't see that happening with any of these characters.
No, this was an opportunity for the costumers and the makeup crews to have some fun for a while.
Mm-hmm.
What I was having an issue with was some of the discussions of what he knows about this region from his previous visits versus what he clearly doesn't know, because he starts getting some of his information out of a little booklet that he's carrying with him, or he has to ask people around him. It seems very selective in terms of what his understanding of the customs and the events and everything that's going on here. It seemed like the holes that they were leaving in his knowledge were very opportunistic.
Well, it'd be like you or I going to a gladiator race in Rome at the Colosseum back in the day. Yeah, we knew they had them, but we wouldn't know exactly what was going on. We wouldn't know a play-by-play.
No, but it seemed like certain I guess the balance wasn't quite right in terms of he seemed to have this inherent knowledge of some of the more finer details about the customs and practices here, and then other things he had to obviously consult the liner notes, so to speak.
This is so obvious that he's just leaving her alone to watch her. You know he's hiding behind something.
Yeah. See, the problem I had with this whole scene here, or with this whole episode, really, is that you do have a lot of really cool aliens that we've never seen before, but the problem is that we've got a lot of aliens that we've never seen before, and then at the end of the episode, we're supposed to care what happens to them, and I couldn't get there. I'm like, okay, destroy their star, destroy their whole planet, I don't care. I just want to know more about what's going on with Clara.
Weird thing to say, I think Russell T. Davies could have done something with that, with all those other aliens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just a point where, you know, if there was somebody that we had known before, if they had thrown in, like, you know, a couple Silurians or something, just something we knew about, it would have been easier to form an emotional connection with, or just, you know, to be more concerned about it.
Well, I mean, like you said, this is all about Clara now. So here we have her meeting this little girl. Do you guys think this is enough? Like, you know, we don't have the alien mystery kind of thing going on. It's all about character. It's all about Clara. I'm not entirely sure that her and this little kid is, like, enough to carry her as the main character here.
Well, it does, you know, meaning in terms of solidifying her companion role at this point, because it's their first off-world adventure.
Based on the episodes we have before and where she is now, yeah.
Well, I think it does attempt to do something very specific. You're taking the human, as far as she knows, you know, this iteration of her, taking her off planet and giving her one of her first alien adventures. And yet the way that she attempts to calm and console and work with this little alien girl is by sharing very human recollections and memories.
You know, one of the things that I was drawn from this is the whole interaction with the mother. We still don't know what exactly happened with the mother, right?
No.
Yeah. Ellie. Yeah, I hope that they close that thread, but it could have just been a Disney sort of thing where, oh, poor Clara, you lost your mother when she was too young.
I don't know. They spent too much time dwelling on the fact that she lost her mom and how heartbroken she was about it for it to just go away. I think Moffat's going to have to say something about it eventually.
I don't think he's going to. I think it's just something we have to accept, made up her character.
No, we get all our answers at Christmas.
We made too much of it.
All our answers.
That mother for that Clara doesn't matter.
Yeah, and now we see the beginning, the real beginning of the TARDIS issues with Clara, which string for what, one episode?
No, I think this is throughout.
More of a journey.
It pops up again in Hyde.
Yep,
right.
The cat fight.
Oh, Hyde is in two episodes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, it was something that built for an episode, and then finally the TARDIS came to a crescendo with her and figured out that she was really trying to do the good thing and save the Doctor.
Or the TARDIS came to the realization that in the TARDIS's efforts to protect its Doctor, it came to the realization, sort of the Occam's razor, that despite the fact that it can't stand Clara because of the fact that she's an anomaly, she's an aberration of time, literally she is an aberration in time, that she is the best thing to utilize in order to protect her Doctor, the TARDIS's Doctor.
So can the TARDIS see throughout its entire timeline?
I believe so. I believe it's been established that the TARDIS sees all times, all possibilities.
Yeah. So the TARDIS knows then that who Clara is.
So that's why.
But this end solution, this effect that happened at the finale was unexpected. That was the aberration. That was the rogue element that was not supposed to be there. So maybe that result of that burp in the time stream, or I should say at this point, this muddying of the Doctor's time stream was something the TARDIS could not see.
So this scene, just to interject real quick, this scene with her retelling the story of the mom telling her she will always be there, or she will always find her when she's lost. That is the one thing that makes me think that we need to come back to it.
Yeah.
At some point in time. But I agree with Melissa. I don't think it's going to happen.
Well, the question is,
get us through this scene.
Yeah. I mean, the question is, was that Moffat, or was it, you know, this writer?
Neil Cross?
Yeah, Neil Cross. Who was it that added that? You know,
that shouldn't be the question. We should still have answers.
Well, no. I mean, because we started talking about this the other day. Jay, you and I were commenting back and forth about an additional clip that we had found from some little webisode release or something that was done as an extra on a box set or on a DVD or something. They had this great little Moffat moment that he was sharing with Amy. You know, in this conversation they were having about the Doctor, you know, does he ever sleep or what does he dream of and that sort of thing. And it was this great little tender moment that only lasted about a minute and a half. And my takeaway from that is that's exactly what Moffat needs to focus on. is when you have to have episodes that need to have a lot of adventure and intrigue and crashing and big booms and whatnot. You've got a lot of great writers to be able to do that. You want suspense and you want a mind-bendy kind of an episode, great. Call up Neil Gaiman and get on it and get going. When you're ready to start tugging at heartstrings, that's where Steemo can step in and say, I've got this.
Yeah.
Well, heartstrings plus guns. That's why we like them. That's why I like them.
So this is one of the minor points which can probably flip you on the entire episode, is I think I remember you guys saying that, all three of you, that none of you like this sort of chant song that's going
No, I was actually about to say before you said that, the one thing I like about this is the song itself. I don't like the storyline. I don't like the part that the song plays, but the music is spot on in this episode.
We all kind of like the music.
I was against the lyrics.
Yeah, it's very, you know, elementary school.
It sounded to me like something very Monty Python. Please do not chop us into little tiny bits.
Right, and like a parody of what actual religious people believe, which is my point.
Okay. I have a very difficult time discerning lyrics from songs because of a hearing issue, so I usually just go with the melody.
And I like the melody. I want that out there.
Yeah, that might be where a lot of the flipping is on this entire episode. Mm-hmm. Is I didn't really pay attention to the lyrics. I watched all these episodes with the closed captioning on because I have a hard time discerning the British accents. Mm-hmm. And so I was just going with the flowing melody, the comforting, almost spirituality, maybe a little bit of it. And
it's 100% spiritual.
Yeah. It would have been better in Latin.
Yeah.
Or gibberish. Don't even add it lyrics.
Yeah. Well, had they taken these exact same words and put them in a different language, I would have loved it. It's simply the fact that I can understand the words and realize how simplistic they are that bothers me.
Right.
Yeah, but the music itself is fantastic. I love it.
How complex do you want a lullaby?
I mean, you make a good point now that you say it, like, because if you speak Latin, then the highbrow Latin song is in your language.
I guess it's just that some of the choice of words, even if it's a lullaby, if it's something that's supposed to be so powerful and have such an importance to it, that it wouldn't be written in the most trite versions of the lyrics.
Or it's the TARDIS's translation,
translation matrix turns everything into fourth grade English.
Yes.
And all of the aliens now sing in the same language.
Imagine if this was your lullaby every night, everyone singing.
A giant sunball blowing up in my room every night.
We are the children. We are the worlds.
It's space kumbaya.
Hakuna Matata.
She even looks a little cat-like with those ridges. Uh-oh.
Oh, snot.
Everybody recognizes there's something horrible going on.
This poor dude.
It's like,
would you put up, that'll protect you.
Just like a nuclear holocaust. Hide under your desk. Everything's okay.
If there's a lead-lined refrigerator around, maybe that will help.
Yeah. I don't mind getting tossed 3 miles. You know, it won't turn me into soup.
Well, Indiana Jones jump in the fridge there.
Yeah. I got what you were laying down.
Picking up what I was putting down?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, the one thing is we don't walk away.
Right.
The one thing about many one things we've heard over the years.
But wasn't it in the last episode that he said...
Except for all the times when I say run.
Yeah.
Run and don't stop running.
wasn't it at the end of the last episode where he said he wished he was more like Claire in that aspect? I wish I was more like you in that.
In what? What did he say?
Caring about people, I believe.
So why is it the only person on the whole planet that wasn't at the campfire sing-along is the one who sells the moped?
Making that money. This guy, it looks like one of the gentlemen from Buffy. Do you guys remember that?
All right. See, I don't see that, no, because everyone else is telling me that the Silents look like the gentleman from Buffy.
They do.
No, it...
Make
Buffy
up your mind.
Clearly
not everybody can look like the freaking gentleman, all right? All you freaking Buffy heads,
everyone
just go
this
away.
Season can.
I got the reference from the Whisperman and the name of the doctor, but that's it.
Yeah. All right, one of y'all's issues with this episode is this cheesy hover bike that goes...
Moped.
All right, yeah, it's awful, but it's Doctor Who. It's got to have some cheese in it. I mean, heck, even the Daleks have, you know, their big sucker arms and...
Smother them in cheddar, it still wouldn't be as cheesy as that damn moped.
Yes.
It's the effect was so horrible that it just, it made it such a point of saying, hey, look, special effect here.
Yeah, especially a week after having the gravity bike... That was like riding up the side of the building in London, which was
anti-grab.
Awesome.
Get it right. It wasn't gravity. It was anti-grab.
It was a gravity bike.
Did you
kind
not
of polar
even hear me say anti-grab?
That has control over gravity. Therefore, gravity bike.
So it reached out, grabbed her, brought her in, and the poor monk who's trying to sing the thing to sleep again doesn't even bother with her.
Well, he's trying to save her life by singing, apparently.
What else can he do but sing?
He should sing the control lyrics. First you want to grab a big stick and hit him over the head.
And weightlifting, sonic screwdriver style.
Yes, here comes a sonic screwdriver doing amazing things it was never originally intended to do.
This is my least favorite part of the episode.
Yeah.
I think Matt Smith does an admirable job with the physical comedy aspects of this.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
I hate this sonic screwdriver bit, though.
Yeah. How can you hate a sonic screwdriver? It's like...
Because... I said the bit, not the screwdriver itself.
Yeah, because if it's doing its job, it should not be a strenuous effort for him to issue sound waves which have no physical form.
It's actually turning the... acoustic tumblers which control the door.
Yes. Okay.
It's
so
shaking.
Push
him.
The button.
So why
is
does
the
he act
button
like that's
very
a
heavy?
Deal?
Because you need Matt Smith to do physical comedy.
That's
because
what it boils down to.
My thumb is getting really, really tired. And that mummy should have totally been a Sycorax. I'm still holding to that.
Yeah, it definitely looks like one. It's like the only leftover Sycorax. I hated the fact that they just, like, all of a sudden threw in, hey, let's give her telekinetic powers. It's like, where the hell did that come from?
When she was brought over in her magical bubble.
Oh,
yes.
And she automatically learned how to use them in the bubble, apparently.
Yeah. It's like a Superman trip.
Did you just lock us in? Yep.
It's like a first date gone bad.
Aren't they always, though? I mean, think back to every adventure the Doctor goes on with the companion for the first time. It's...
I thought you meant every first date we've ever been on. There's always a soul-eating monster somewhere.
What, that doesn't happen to you guys?
You must have some really rocking first dates.
Well, they're memorable, that's for sure.
Read my blog. Oh, this poor dude.
Yep.
Oh, well, he...
Shut up.
He takes care of it.
He certainly wears red.
Wrist thing that... Same thing that...
I love how it's just like, hey, I'm going to go ahead and get out of here. Not, hey, grab onto me. I can get a fall out of here. It's like, yeah. I'm going to save my own ass. Thanks.
See ya.
I have decided you're all screwed.
You can... My singing career is over. Screw y'all.
The thing I hate is how they are so close on the mummy god thing that, like, every time it hits the glass, you can see the prosthetics kind of shifting, and it's like, it just makes it very obvious that it's makeup.
I just can't imagine being that actor and, like, what your motivation? You have to get them through the glass, even though you know the glass won't break. What do you do?
It's like, what is it, an alien?
Breathe heavily on it.
From Alien or Aliens or even Independence Day, when the little tentacles try to shoot out and get through the glass. They should have done that.
Yeah.
Pick up your throne.
No, that the useful chairs come in Crimson Horror. They can't reference that yet.
Truth.
Oh, yeah, wait, the speech. The speech. Yeah.
You were made of stars.
And this is another reason I love this episode. Is
this that, was, just, this
I
was
forgot
good.
About this. Yeah.
I just go all gooey for this sort of stuff. I love the fact that he's articulating the fact that we're not in the first solar system. We're in the solar system Mark II because the first star had to explode and give us good stuff, heavy metals to condense into planets and create us and heck, we're not even on the first Earth. We're on Earth Mark II because the first Earth got destroyed by the moon. So I love that sort of cosmic timeline stuff.
When you just finished saying that, it cuts to me, him saying, there will never be another. That's so beautiful.
This is absolutely Carl Sagan.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the we are made of star stuff.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But I just wish that they had given it more gravity. Because tucking it in the middle of this, rubber monster behind the plexiglass kind of pulled focus.
So I admire them for putting it in.
Yeah.
I love the simplistic things that he says in there, too. Like the beeswax and different things that he says were made. That's not Carl Sagan. That is definitely the Doctor. And so in the span of, what, 2 or 3 minutes, she's gone from, we are absolutely staying here, to, get us the frack out of here. Marry the Queen.
Yeah.
The gentlemen are back.
The vampires.
I thought these guys were cool aliens. I really wanted them to be, like, more... I don't know, play a bigger part.
They're very Oodish, though.
Yeah, I guess you could.
Ood's dressed like Edward Scissorhands.
Yeah. Good call.
They're just as much the Ood's as the mummy is a Sycorax.
Fair enough.
It's like, we're going to go with completely original stuff that's based off things we've already done.
So she's got this elaborate dress. She's got this lei around her neck, Mary the Queen, and she's facing this vampire through the glass.
Well, you're going to look your best.
All right. I don't even want to go into the science about how a sonic screwdriver could repel Jedi-like force powers.
Or how Mary was able to run through all of that.
Yeah.
From both sides.
See, you're making assumptions about the Jedi light and phosphenes and things like that.
I don't know if it's Jedi light. This everything here has to do with songs and...
I'm totally kidding. If phosphenes are things in your eyes, it makes no sense.
And again, they ran through the bubble again.
It's sonic energy, not physical. Yeah, it's apparently.
Sonic means sound. It's physical energy.
There's four forces, we all know. Strong force, the weak force, the electromagnetic force. Which one is it?
The light side, the dark side. No. Sorry, wrong geekdom.
This is the dessert course.
So wouldn't that be great if they had a Doctor Who episode where he traveled to the sound stage where they're recording the next Star Wars movie? J.J. Abrams is there. That'd be awesome.
My head would implode.
See, now the glass is weak.
And here we start the 2010 sort of planet-size implosion. Yeah, I've made a tactical error. And the time has come.
Yeah, this is when it all kind of started to fall apart for me, because I was just like, this makes very little sense.
How many villains are there in this episode? Just too many. Now grandfather's up.
Now it's like we're going to upgrade from these guys to the this you know, Jedi Light guys, and then we're going to upgrade from them to the mummy.
Well, Melissa, it's like a 90s style video game, right? You got to get through these monsters in order to get to the big
boss.
We're
at the boss.
Holy
yeah.
crap, they're all Koopa's kids. It all makes sense now.
Imagine the Doctor in this solar system. Crazy hijinks. We get one story.
Boring.
And they're just standing there waiting for it to happen.
Yeah, let's talk this through while this thing is about to devour
everything.
Well, I mean, to be fair, is there a minimum safe distance? Yeah.
You have all of time and space.
If you can get to the TARDIS in time.
They have the hover bike, right? The moped?
Yeah, but they can't blow their whole special effects budget just trying to get back to the TARDIS. Jeez.
Why save yourself when you have an obvious escape route?
But see, that's the part that bothered me, though, is I'm kind of like, why don't you just get back in the TARDIS? And I didn't care about them saving everything.
Oh, this is awesome.
Yeah. This is the part of the episode.
So now we get the showdown with the Great Pumpkin. So,
but this is the second great speech of the entire thing, because, you know, the entire reincarnation of the Doctor since 2005, there's a lot of pain associated with this guy, right? He's had to do some terrible things, and usually there's always somebody that dies in an episode, somebody that's good, not the villain, and some unexpected person or whatever. And so the guy's got a lot of stuff to throw at this grandfather, the old, sure. What's it called, the old grandfather? Or
the old god.
The old god. Dude. They call him grandfather, but he is the old god.
Yeah, so his whole speech, the take it all, that's the second great speech.
Yeah.
Of the episode.
I think this may, you've got this one, and you put it up against his Sermon on the Mount from Pandora Opens. Where again, it's a matter of using his non warrior's tact as his best defense. The fact that, you know, in a lot of his arguments or some of his greatest means of facing down his adversaries is saying, you know, there's nothing you could possibly do to harm me worse than what my own mind, my own heart does to me with all of the, you know, all the baggage I carry, all the things that I've seen and all the wrongs that I've caused. You know, what could you possibly do? But I think this may have more weight to it, which I think may have been one of the things that bothered me about this episode, is that there were so many other aspects of it that I couldn't click with. I was just, you know, it was pulling me out of the episode. But then you put this beautiful little gem in the middle of it, and you're like, if you were capable of writing this, then you wrote all the rest of that? It was so off balance.
Usually what's happening at this pinnacle point where the Doctor is saving everybody through his non-military fighting means is he's got a bunch of people around him that are fighting to give him the time to do this. And that is absent in here as well. I just wanted to point that out.
It's not absent here. No, my favorite part of this is where he says, "Can you hear them sing?" Which you just said a minute ago, and it's just so beautiful. I just think something is lost in the fact, like we just talked about, that it's actual English lyrics that are very second grade. Like, and his speech here, we've already heard him make several great speeches, both with, you know, the Sermon on the Mount, and but in this speech. This episode itself, you know, like sync up that beautiful harmony of the music with. I mean, I like his speech here, but it's not.
I think it's gorgeous.
Yeah,
I love it. I'm just saying. I wish.
Look at it. Go in and grab it written out, and just read through it. You know, and he's, you know, he can draw tears on this. This was one of the proving points to me that Matt Smith should have been handed heavier material earlier on.
Mm-hmm. This, I had liked Matt Smith before, but I've got to say, this is the moment where I was like, holy crap, I'm going to hate to see him go.
But I mean, this is what I'm saying. Matt Smith is great here. If only the writing, which, you know, wrote a good speech and it's very climactic or whatever, if only the writing had put this in the proper episode at the proper point in the whole sequence of everything.
I think you needed this at this point in time, though, because you needed to equate his pain with Clara's pain in order for the two to bond, truly bond, which they haven't yet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. Did anyone else think when you first watched this that he was actually giving up his memories?
Yes.
Yeah.
That bothered me because I was like, okay, so you shared with him, but there was no real sacrifice there. He looks physically tired, but I was like, what was the point of all that?
Well, I think Clara thinks that's what happened too. And here she comes on her moped.
It might have been what happened, but in the course of what's about to happen, the memories return to him, perhaps? I don't know.
It just always irritated me. And that's one of the things that really bothered me about this episode. But it's the most important leaf in the world.
According to my dad.
Your dad's full of shit. Next.
I hate that it's not the same leaf from the last episode.
It's not even the same leaf from that scene right there.
Yeah.
This is a big round leaf. That was a maple leaf.
Who didn't see this?
See, that's what it is the dad put it in his pocket and it got all crumpled up, so he was picking up new leaves every time. And
this is the one drawer full of leaves.
This is the one she got for her 19th birthday or something.
And in both the context of right here and in the last episode of the season, It doesn't matter what the actual leaf was. It matters what the leaf represents.
No, I get that. It just bothers me that it's not, like, they couldn't even be continuous through two
episodes. Internal consistency.
Yeah.
I'm going to use that the next time I'm in court. I know this isn't actually the evidence that proves that I'm innocent, but it's evidence that would prove that in theory I should be innocent.
This represents
the evidence.
It represents my innocence.
Now, I did like that Clara understood more here what forever meant. Like, you know, you have this alien who has traveled through, you know, from the beginning to the end of the universe, literally, and yet Clara, you know, the simple human girl, is able to grasp the concept of infinity more than the doctor can.
I love those shots of them backlit.
Yeah, the silhouette.
Yeah, right there.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then, with the sun missing from the middle of their little solar system, all the planets go horribly out of alignment and whiz off into space.
And we're back on Earth, so we don't care.
Not necessarily, because if it imploded into a black hole, the gravitational pull would have been the same.
Hey, you have completely eradicated this.
It would have been.
No, yeah, but they wouldn't have any light.
True. No, you're absolutely right. Their source of power is gone.
All the species die.
But you know what? You were there and you helped us out for that moment. So here, let's give you this ring back.
Okay, that notwithstanding, that's actually one of the reasons I like this episode, is nobody died.
In the
at least by
itself.
The end of the episode.
That's right.
We don't see anyone die.
See, that's that one of the epilogue. So cold. And there's the dog woman over in the background.
That would have been a great after credit scene.
And this scene, in retrospect, I'm not her. Okay, yeah. Mm. I get it. But at the time, it was like, nah, you're lying.
You're not her.
Which is why we hated her.
I hated her inconsistency. That's the main thing about this part of the series that bothered me so much, is just that she wasn't consistent from one episode to the next.
That's the point.
Yeah, but we didn't have that point, which just left you the entire... After beating you up the entire season with the inconsistencies, and then trying to say, no, really, everything was in the right place at the right time all along, you just didn't know it. I'm sorry, I've already formulated an opinion.
Agreed.
And the ominous music to end.
The doctor staring through his lack of eyebrows.
So, yes, I enjoyed the episode, even the second time through here. I really enjoyed the Odyssey part of it. I enjoyed the speeches. And if you take it out of the context of the greater story, like there was no great intelligence, which there should have been. Clara thing really wasn't driven forward other than her bond with the doctor. In retrospect, maybe it's not the absolute best episode I've ever seen of Doctor Who, but it's still the journey that I would like to take with the Doctor. If I had one sort of trip to take with the Doctor, it would definitely be this sort of thing.
Knowing that this was the classic, every new companion goes through the show me something amazing episode. Mm-hmm. You know, the first off-world, I'm going to open your eyes to the infinite possibilities of what we can do. This did that.
Yeah.
I think because of the fact that in the midst of it, they also decided to include a companion that we were coming into it with a lot of expectations for explanations that we either were or weren't going to get, and it didn't help that at all. Didn't make it any better, didn't make it any worse. It kind of left that whole thing just hanging on episode 2, technically, of Clara. And the fact that in the midst of all of this, when this is supposed to be an off-world adventure episode, we've got this, while beautiful, rather misplaced moment with the Doctor, you know, the speech in front of the sun, where he bares his soul and offers up the sacrifice of his millennia of memories that ultimately fails, and that she has to come jumping in and throw a leaf at it to get us out. I don't know. I feel like it was running on a couple of different levels that didn't coincide. Cross and Moffat as his guide needed to pick a level that they wanted to go on.
I completely concur. I have to say, I have to really go back to what I was saying about comparing this to Pandorica opening, because if they had decided to make Rings of Akhetin a finale and really heighten the drama, I think we all could have kind of gotten behind it. But as it is, where it was, there were some great speeches, great music, great acting. And yet, for some reason, like, it doesn't all fit together.
The things that really pulled this episode together for me are the music, not the lyrics, but the music, and the speeches. You know, both the speech he gives Mary about being singular in the universe, and then the speech he gives at the end. I mean, those three things make this a decent episode for me. If you could take those three things and put them together with, you know, a solid story, I think this episode would have been absolutely amazing. It's just the fact that you had those three powerful items and you surrounded them with other tripe. It just makes it a mediocre episode. But all in all, I mean, watching it again, it wasn't too bad. I'm still kind of on my firm opinion of it was okay.
And we still have some dangling issues from this episode with the death of the mother and her saying that she'll come find her anytime, anywhere. I mean, if they choose to bring that up again, it would tie neatly into this episode, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah. No, I don't think so. They're going to retcon a great deal of this.
We'll see.
They don't even need to. You just don't even have to mention it again. It doesn't make any sense. You know, because who cares about Clara anymore? We spend a whole half a season. I was obsessing over her. And at this point, like, you know, who cares anymore?
I would like to see them give her more depth and turn her into the awesome character that we had seen snippets of before she truly came into it.
Souffle Girl?
Souffle Girl, or even, you know...
Bring back Souffle Girl.
Or even Vienna, or Victorian era Clara. Yeah, she was cool too.
I think we're at the point where that is going to happen because she's had those experiences now.
Well, either they're going to have to figure out a way to do that consistently, or they're going to have to get rid of her. Because in light of what we know about why she's there now... Even though she's not cognizant of it in all iterations, there's only one. And then it's a matter of, okay, are we going to have a couple of episodes where it's a Clara who doesn't know that she's the Clara? Or are we going to follow the Clara that does know, that is now traveling with the Doctor in light of or in full knowledge of what she's done? You know, the one who's been there and is now traveling again. That inconsistency, I think they said in some of the quotes finishing out last series, you haven't seen the last of the Claras, plural.
See, I think they've got a wonderful opportunity to take forward kind of the concept of the Dr. Donna sort of figure into a new companion, now Clara, and really run it to ground with some amazing stories. But I don't know, the first part of her introduction is, in retrospect, is lackluster to me. So I enjoyed it when I was watching it the first time. Now that I know where it ends up, I don't know. We'll see what happens with the 50th and the Christmas specials.
I don't know how long we're going to see her continue the next series.
I'm just gonna
hang this out there that I'm personally prepared to reach into my pocket for a quarter and say that we will not see series 9 with Clara in it. If we even see the entirety of series 8 with her,
I can't say that
playing against Capaldi.
I can't take that bet with you because another series and I could see a new companion or another half a series or whatever.
Especially because they've been saying, oh, well, you know, at first she had a crush on the Doctor. Now she's going to react to his regeneration. And it's like, have you ever even seen this show?
She needs to be the anchor in his state of of confusion that goes along with the regeneration, which they've played at times that disillusionment has been very brief. Other times it's lasted for episodes where he's still a little foggy after the transition. But with her as the guide...
You're going to have this whole new mystery with Peter Capaldi trying to fit in all his characters into the Doctor, as the news came out last week that supposedly there's supposed to be some tie-in with the Peter Capaldi characters in the Doctor Who universe. So we'll see what happens with that. It's very fishy to me. Sounds exactly like what we just went through with Clara. So,
yeah, there definitely seems to be a continual, let's give them all kinds of questions so they forget about the ones we haven't answered yet.
Right.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to see what happens in the next couple months. So next week we are going to be doing our commentary on Cold War. So I'm kind of looking forward to going back and seeing that one because I've watched it the one time and that's it.
Yeah,
so.
And I personally, I was okay with the episode. I mean, as we joked about at the time, haha, it's a submarine episode, and yet it's a canned episode that really didn't have any bearing on anything before or after, and we knew we weren't going to get anything propelled forward with the Clara revelation at the time, which we didn't. We didn't get squat out of it.
You got a resurgence of the Ice Warriors, though.
That was all we wanted out of it. That was all I wanted. Like, bring back the Ice Warriors and make them kick ass, and that's what I got. So I'm psyched about watching it again.
Yeah. So All right. Well, you know, if you guys have enjoyed going back and rewatching this one, let us know. It has your opinion changed? Has it stayed the same? You know, what was your takeaway from this episode after having time to digest everything else?
Well, thanks for having me on, guys. It's been really
fun.
Hey! Children of the Rescue!
You joined us for two episodes, and you bozos only get one.
Yeah! Ha. Yay, technology!
Yeah, I called in the NSA to help me with that last one.
Their backup tape.
Yeah, I wasn't quite liking what I heard, so I just had them come in and take care of your computer, Jay.
Yeah, I appreciate that. At least now
you're welcome.
Why didn't they pay for his new one then?
Yeah, seriously. well, I mean, this has been a lot of fun. Shooter, thank you for coming on. It's great to hear someone who, you know, truly did enjoy this.
Yep, sure did. So, even though I definitely see faults in it, I definitely still think it's a great episode. So, I mean, in the context of the one episode, I have to qualify that now. But
I'll take all the hate mail directed to Shooter to Melissa at Gallifrey Public Radio. Don't worry.
Awesome!
Yay, you get away scot-free.
No pun intended.
All right. Well, this has been episode 55 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, I am Jay saying...
And this is Melissa saying, I'm totally going to download the soundtrack to this episode as long as I can find it in Spanish or French or something.
God, can you imagine it in German?
Yelling at you.
Mein Gott in Himmel. And this is Kier saying, the episode is over. My name is Kier Hansen, and the long episode ended with me.
And this is Shooter saying, wow, that was a nice story.
We'll see you guys next week.
I don't see you.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. Have something to say, something we got wrong, or something you just need to weigh in on? Send us an email at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com or leave us a voicemail at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You can also find us on Twitter at Gallifrey Radio, on Stitcher Smart Radio, facebook.com/Gallifrey Public Radio, or on iTunes. You can also head over to our homepage at gallifreypublicradio.com, where you can leave comments on each episode and get into discussions on the topics we bring up. You can also keep up to date on all the latest news and what's going on in the community. Music by Beyond the Epilogue and Retcon Addict.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2013.